Welcome to Top Shelf at the Merrick Library with your host, Carol Ann Tack. Welcome to Top Shelf at Merrick Library. I am your host, Carol Ann Tack. Thank you all for joining me. Listeners, readers, and Merrick Library patrons, today's guest is the Pulitzer Prize-winning author of People of the Book and the best-selling author of fiction titles that you all know so well, like March, The Secret Chord, Year of Wonders, and her incredible nonfiction work, Nine Parts of Desire, which talk about compelling, and I still think about that book. And then came her foreign correspondence. And today, Geraldine Brooks, yes, that Geraldine Brooks is here to talk about her brand new release, which is an American historical must read. The book is called Horse. Geraldine Brooks, I just cannot thank you enough for joining us today on Merrick Library's Top Shelf podcast.
Well, it's great to be with you, Carol Ann.
Any description I would give to Horse would hardly measure up to the wonder that it is. So if you would please tell listeners about this book.
It's a braided narrative set in three time periods, and the historical spine of the story is the true story of the actual racehorse Lexington, who was a national obsession in the 1850s and 60s, not only the fastest horse, but also the bravest and then the greatest stud sire in American equestrian history, and the story of what happens to him during the Civil War. So that's the historical spine. And then there's a contemporary thread at the modern day Smithsonian Institution, where there's research going on into the horse's skeleton to try and understand his speed and endurance, and the artworks that were created, the portraits of the horse, and there are paintings of mysterious provenance. So that's the contemporary thread. And those paintings take us to the middle thread, which is immediate post-World War II New York and the rise of the abstract expressionist movement. And believe it or not, there's a connection to this racehorse there.
It's amazing what you have done here, but of course you're a pro. Why wouldn't it be? But for the reader, it's just amazing how you weave those stories together. And I am not going to spoil a thing about those. Tell us about the inspiration for this project. Where does the idea come from to start tracking or tracing the provenance of Lexington?
It was completely coincidental meeting over a lunch. I was at Plymouth Plantation, which, as you may know, is a wonderful living history museum here in Massachusetts. And another guest at the lunch was an official from the Smithsonian Institution, and he was regaling the table by the extraordinarily unusual job he'd just done, delivering the skeleton of a racehorse from Washington to the Museum of the Horse in Kentucky. And as he started telling the story of the horse's racing history and the twists and turns of the horse's career, and then got to what happened to the horse during the Civil War, at that point, my lunch was uneaten, and I suspected that I had the subject for my next novel.
Oh, my gosh. So as you're uncovering all of these layers of history, how long did it take to write the book?
It took forever. But, you know, it kept, I thought I was embarking on the story of a racehorse. And I very quickly realized that that story was intimately entwined with the history of racism in America. So once you kick open that door, there's just an immense amount of work that you have to do. And then the story kept branching off into the fascinating characters who were connected to the horse, both white and black. And then the story of the paintings of the horse, which had such intriguing journeys into the present. And then, of course, the science at the Smithsonian, which is just catnip to me, I have to say. I love an excuse to get up in people's business and see what they do for a living. And so it was just wonderful to be able to go behind the scenes at the Smithsonian and see the research and how it's carried out.
The main story, at least for me, involves Jarrett, the enslaved boy, and Lexington, the racehorse that he raises and trains.
Where does Jarrett come from? Was he inspired by the Thomas Scott painting that you talk about? Which, boy, that was some storyline that, especially the afterword, which I won't say anything about that, but about that whole piece of Thomas Scott's artwork. Tell us a little bit about Jarrett.
So there is a painting by Thomas Scott that was described in the magazines of the day. I found a reference to it in a very old copy of Harper's Magazine, and it's described as the best painting that Scott ever did. And he painted Lexington several times. And this one is Lexington in his old age being led. And the title of the painting is Lexington being led out by, quote, Black Jarrett, his groom. And this painting is missing. So I haven't seen the painting. Nobody's seen it in more than 150 years. But imagining who that black groom might have been in the context of this industry, which was huge in the 1850s. It was a national obsession, the like of which we don't have anymore, something that brought everybody together in shared interest. And it was built on the plundered labor of enslaved black horsemen, their skills and their work and their talent, the trainers and the grooms and the jockeys.
It's so incredible that you brought this to all readers. It's just so important. The contribution of the Black Horseman cannot be understated. To go to Lexington, I can hardly believe that his skeleton is actually preserved at the Smithsonian because of his performance on the track. And it's so notable that his bones are articulated. The whole study and the art of articulating bones, I mean, my mouth dropped. All of that was fresh and new to me. And I went down the rabbit hole. And of course, I'm searching up things I probably should never have looked at regarding the articulation process. As you're doing your research, was there anything that surprised you? I mean, obviously, everything here is surprising and sort of eye-opening. Maybe eye-opening is the better word. But was there anything that really surprised you about your research?
Yes, absolutely. So the thing that surprised me the most is you're touring this absolutely state-of-the-art scientific facility with every modern gizmo and contraption that high tech can create. And yet bones are still cleaned by domestic beetles who are kept in a warm, dark, sealed room, and they bring in animal carcasses and the beetles eat the flesh off because it is the best way to clean bones without damaging them that science has been able to come up with. So I would say the bug room at the Smithsonian Support Center was the most surprising thing.
Equal parts horrifying and surprising. Listening to that reading, I shouldn't say listening, but reading that conversation between all of the players in that scene was just really shocking. While I was watching the Kentucky Derby, I had just finished reading, maybe a week and a half before, I just finished reading The Galley of Horse. So now I'm watching the Kentucky Derby. And like most people, you know, we watch either the first hour before and then the first hour after. But once I started watching it this time, I watched the whole thing. I wanted to hear everything about these horses and the ownership and the sires. I mean, you brought me, and by the way, it was very annoying to a lot of my friends because I kept saying, hey, you know this, hey, you know that, because of your book. And I'm walking around with the galley telling everyone they need to read horse. When I think of Lexington and all of the horses he sired, can you give us like any of the great players that he is responsible for?
Oh, so many. Four winners of the Preakness, including Preakness himself, was one of Lexington's babies. the first ever winner of the Kentucky Derby was Aristides, who was Lexington's son. And Aristides was trained by a black trainer, Ansel Williams, and ridden by a black jockey. And then, you know, you might have noticed that for a century, there were no black jockeys because they're all pushed out after Reconstruction in the Jim Crow backlash. So the story of injustice didn't end with slavery in some ways for the black horsemen. You know, there were tests of their mettle and their endurance, and many people had to leave the country in order to pursue their careers. So it's really a very tragic history. But I have to say that race, as I was watching it, even though it's so much shorter than the races that Lexington took part in, you know, they used to race for 4 miles, which is more than twice as long as a Kentucky Derby, more tactics. But the tactics of the jockey were so striking, the way he went from the far outside to the rail straight away and was at the absolute back and then came, found the pockets and moved up. So that was the tactics. But the character of that horse, Richie, as his stable name is, which I think is adorable, when he gets level with the front runners and the race caller hasn't even noticed him, and then he does something I've never seen a racehorse do, going full pelt in a race. He turns his head 90 degrees and he looks at his two competitors. And I think he gave them the stink eye and then turned around and went into a whole other gear and won the thing. And I thought that's exactly what Lexington would have done.
You may have converted me to horse racing.
Be careful, because I've got a lot of issues with the treatment of equines in modern horse racing. Yeah, for sure. I think that there's just tremendous abuse of the animals, over-drugging them, over-training them when they're too young. And I think there's a lot of reform necessary. But then when you see an outstanding equine athlete like Richie, and you can, and it's very consoling to me that his connections chose not to run him in the next Triple Crown race because they're concerned for his welfare. Now, if there could be a lot more of that, I'd be more excited about racing.
I was pleased with that honesty, with them doing that, with them being so careful with him, with Richie.
It's tragically unusual, because usually people just wear these horses out.
The equestrian community, you follow horses, you have horses. As you're writing your book, how many of the folks in your, say, your pals in the community knew about Lexington and this story?
Well, lucky me, none of them. Yes, people in Lexington, Kentucky know, because right. He is the emblem of the city. But, you know, this is what you dream of as a novelist, is coming across a story that should be more well known and for some reason isn't. So that was like a gift.
I know you're about to start this incredible book tour. Where is the best place for readers and listeners to find the latest and the greatest for Geraldine Brooks events and discussions and Zooms and all of that?
Yeah, all the details of the tour and the most up-to-date and complete are on my website, geraldinebrooks.com. And then I have a lot of fun with my Facebook author page, which is a combination of news about the book, but just little things from my life with animals here on Martha's Vineyard.
Yeah. And I did the deep dive and looked at some of that. And there's a horse that Valentine shares a paddock with, I guess. What's the name of the horse?
Screaming Hot Wings.
Who doesn't love that?
Screaming Hot Wings is a great example of a racehorse that things worked out for, because he was a winner at 2, which is a time when horses maybe shouldn't even be running. But anyway, he was a winning racehorse. And then he was successfully retrained as a jumping horse. And my neighbor says he's the longest relationship in her life. He's 33 years old now. So it just goes to show how much these horses have to give us if we let them and if we look after them.
Oh my gosh, it's a great article. And I think I found it on your Facebook page. So I will put all of the links to where listeners can find Geraldine Brooks. Don't miss any of her upcoming events. They're going to be amazing. Before I let you go, do you have any book recommendations you'd like to share?
I am still reeling with admiration for The Overs Story by Richard Powers.
You just gave me the chills. That is I've never read anything like that in my life.
It's one of those rare books that changes the way you look at things after you've read it. And it's not just me. I then gave it to my oldest son and he read it. And we both did exactly the same thing, which is we went out and hugged a tree.
Who doesn't do that? Even midway through. And I was listening and reading at the same time. And there's I believe it's a chestnut tree in my area. And every time I go over to that tree, and I'm sure people think I am absolutely crazy. That's an amazing recommendation. Anything you can share about what might be next for you? I know this process is exhausting, so it's probably too early in advance to ask about what you might be. Where are you having lunch next? I guess that's the question.
Well, I do know what I'm going to be doing next, but I'm not going to talk about it just yet because I don't want to jinx it. And it's a little different. And so I'm not going to talk about it till I've started work on it and I know exactly what it is.
Okay. I am loving that. Today's book, Horse, by today's guest, Geraldine Brooks, is on shelves everywhere. So please grab a copy at your local library or your local independent bookstore. Horse is published by Viking Press, an imprint of Penguin Random House. And Geraldine Brooks, thank you so much for joining me and the listeners today of Merrick Library's Top Shelf. And I hope you'll join me for this next project. It would be such an honor.
I would love to do that, Caroline. Thank you for having me.
Oh my gosh. Have a great book tour and we will see you soon.
Bye.
Take care. Listeners, I thank all of you for joining me today. Remember to follow Top Shelf at Merrick Library on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and wherever you find most podcasts. For the latest and the greatest at the Merrick Library, check out our website, merricklibrary.org. Special thanks to Merrick Library Director Dan Chusmere, Assistant Director Diane Bondi, and the Merrick Library Board of Directors for getting us off the ground and on to the airwaves. Until the next time, remember to keep us on your top shelf.